When it comes to Pod Meets World, we're synonymous with two things. Watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago and loving Hyundai.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
And as you know, we are tech heads.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
And with the available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car, backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only. What if there was someone who wanted to help you find a job? Choose Express Employment Professionals, and that's exactly what you'll get.
They can help you find work in any industry. With just one interview at Express, you have a connection to endless jobs.
Whether you want a contract job, a new full-time role, or a summer job, choose Express Employment Professionals.
Express has more than 860 locally owned locations and no fees for job seekers.
Visit expresspros.com today to find a location near you.
I am happy to announce that Target Circle, the program we all know and love, now has automatic deals.
And with the all-new Target Circle being free to join, there has never been an easier way to take advantage of the most deals at Target.
When you shop in-store or online, Target Circle deals will be automatically applied at checkout, so you get the savings without lifting a finger.
And right now, you can sign up for Target Circle 360, which offers unlimited same-day delivery for just $49 for the first year of membership.
That's $50 off the regular price.
And when you pay with your Target Circle card, you can save an extra 5% your way every day.
Visit target.com/circle or the Target app for more details.
Same-day delivery is subject to terms. Applies to orders over $35.
For 5% discount, restrictions apply. See program rules in-store or at target.com/circle card.
So one of my secret talents that I'm not sure you guys know about is that if I had any business sense or could wear a suit and tie every day and make phone calls, you know, do like business person type stuff, I would be a very good talent agent or maybe a talent manager. Yes.
Why? And why is this a secret talent?
Let me give you evidence. So I used to do so long ago. I used to do a podcast, or I used to guest star on a podcast where they had come up with a segment where I would just do samples, or I would talk about actors' performances that I really liked or appreciated. And like, so, you know, I just picked out like scenes and I would talk about them and whatever. And one of the ones that I picked was like, I decided, oh my God, I had seen this obscure movie. And this like English actor, I was like, this guy's got the thing. Like, this is going to be a movie star. And by the time I went to go record the thing, Andrew Garfield had already been cast as Spider-Man. But like, I saw Boy A back in Tribeca when it was like his first, and I was like, this guy. And so I got a text last year. I don't think I told you guys about this, but I got this text from my friend who's, he's actually my lawyer, but he's also my friend. We've been friends since college. And he texts me and he's like, what the hell is this alert that I have on my phone? And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, it says bet with Ryder from 10 years ago about Lena Dunham's boyfriend on Girls.
Wow.
And I'm like, what? And he had set an alert and we went back and
for
I looked at my
years
calendar.
In the future.
And 10 years before his alert, we had had dinner together with him and his wife and me and my wife. And we had gotten into an argument where I said, that guy's going to be a movie star. And he was like, no, no. And I was predicting Adam Driver. And so he's
oh my God.
He's like, so I guess I guess you're right. I'm like, yeah, so what do I win? We didn't write down what I get. But yeah, 10 years, because we had clearly got into it enough that he put an alert on his phone. Because I don't know, do you guys ever see the pilot for Girls?
No.
Yes.
Yeah. I was like,
I'm just amazed at your talent that you're able to watch someone who's already successful and say they're going to also do movies.
This guy who's the star of a TV show is going to be somebody.
It's a weird, it's like.
You
it's
guys like, don't remember the Adam Driver thing, though?
No, like, I do, but point it's, was, just, it's he not was like good you're watching somebody on the street and saying, that person's got it. You're saying, like, I saw somebody in a movie and thought, that person's a good actor.
No, that person's going to be a mega star.
Uh-huh. A bigger star than they are now.
Yes. Obviously. Yeah.
So it's a very niche kind of talent manager. You want to be a talent manager of somebody who's already successful.
That's what an agent does. Yes. It's like going to the minor leagues and being like, come, you're going to be in the majors one day. And being able to spot that. Like, I was having arguments, obviously, with somebody in the industry where they were like, I don't see it. And like, I actually remember getting into it with Michael Jacobs about Girl, because I was right around the time of Girl Meets World, the Girls pilot. And he was like, I don't see it. I don't know. He wasn't talking about Adam Driver. He was talking about the show in general. I was like, right. Well, this is going to be the biggest show. And I was like, and that guy is going to be the biggest movie star in the world.
This is a good time for me to tell you that I have a prediction about Timothée Chalamet. I think exactly. that kid,
this
going
Tom
places.
Cruise guy
might make it.
I see him as a movie star.
All right, I'll keep my eye on. I'll give you guys predictions. I will do it now.
Okay.
Now you're open to it. If you're open, if you're willing, but I feel like, yeah, it's, you know, you gotta keep your eyes and ears open. If I was going to plays, cause I've done it before too.
I was going to say, if it was a play or something like that, I could see that.
All right. Yeah. Start bringing them to us,
right? I don't
see
that many plays that are, you know, cause I remember Rachel Weisz. I saw her back in 1995. And I went back twice. I was like, this woman is so unbelievable. And and that was in, you know, she was probably 21, 22 years old. I designed for
She's
Living.
She's always going to be
twice.
One of my biggest Hollywood.
And I was like, I was obsessed with her. And like, no one knew who she was. And then sure enough, boom, like the biggest movie star.
And she married James Bond.
You've got the perfect platform to share your predictions with all of us, Ryder.
Get some
credits. Yes. Start letting us know when you see things. Just
and when
start
we bet you, there'll be like an actual prize. You'll win something because it sounds like you didn't win anything.
Yeah.
Adam Driver got an amazing career and you didn't get anything. I guess so. Yeah. Got
some I mean, hopefully this translates to being a director, right? Because the point is to be able to cast people who who are being underestimated in their lane. And that's this is like consistently what Hollywood does to actors is that they're always underestimated because actors are only judged by their context consistently, right? Yeah. And like, so people see somebody on a TV show and they're like, that they could never be a big movie star. They see somebody, you know, as the best friend on a sitcom like, they could never, or an older brother or
that
just
guy
the
could
love
only
interest.
Do drama.
Yeah.
Do you think that's, I think that's changed a bit now though, because television became so powerful that all the big movie stars jump to TV.
TV has changed.
But I think it blurred the lines.
But people still have such a hard time seeing an actor out of context. You know?
Yes. I don't know. You see a lot of you see kids nowadays, especially that are on some sitcom or something. Like the girl, McKenna Grace, is that her name?
Yes.
Yeah, who was like on a sitcom or we're just watching her on Designated Survivor. And even then you're like, but then now she's blowing up and you know, she's got the Ghostbusters movies and stuff like that. So I can see there's more if a television show becomes huge, like when something like Stranger Things, where it's on everybody's lips, then those are the kids that are picked to then be in movies. So it's that's happened now more so than it did back in the 90s. If you were a TV star,
even being a Disney star when we were kids meant nothing. But now it's like that's the path to superstar. If you're on a Disney Channel show and then you have a record deal, then you're like a movie star within 10 years or whatever. Yeah, no, that didn't happen.
Right.
But I still think that it's hard for people to see, especially like comedy to drama, drama to comedy, or just range, you know, like you basically get cast as a variation on what you've already done.
Do you see any movie stars on this podcast with you? It's okay, Ryder. Welcome back. Welcome back to the show. We really missed you the last time. We missed you. We're so happy you're back. Please say your name.
Ryder Strong, not a huge movie star.
And I'm Will Friedle, whose dream has just been crushed on this podcast.
Welcome to our show. Today, we are recapping season 4, episode 11, An Affair to Forget. It originally aired November 29th, 1996. The synopsis: when Sean is dumped by Jennifer, Corey begins bad-mouthing her. When Jennifer finds out about what Corey has been saying, she takes Sean back on the condition that he end his relationship with Corey. So it was written by, and this is a bit of an odd credit, teleplay by Jeff Sherman, story by Eileen O'Hare. So this may be something when we have Jeff Sherman on again, we will have to ask him what the situation was with that. I know he has complained before that IMDb has some weird credit stuff.
But we've never had a story by before.
I don't think so.
So this must have been an outside script that got rewritten, because Eileen O'Hare was not a writer on our show, right?
So an outside script
came in, and then Jeff rewrote it, and then, that's super interesting.
Yeah. Guest starring Kristanna Loken as Jennifer Bassett. She is best known as the badass TX in 2003's Terminator 3 Rise of the Machines, and as Rain in 2005's Blood Rain. But she's also shown up on Unhappily Ever After, Sliders, The L Word, Burn Notice, and much more. What did you guys think of the episode?
I loved this episode. I absolutely loved everything about this episode. I thought the A story was awesome. I thought you and Ben were so funny. I thought the B story was great. I thought the Feeny Eric stuff was good. Yeah. To me, this was a solid sitcom funny episode. I went back, I rewound things a bunch of times. I really liked this episode.
Yeah. Right. I think it's A plus writing. Like, I think it's probably one of our best written episodes. Something happened to me near the end of this episode. It's interesting. I know this is a classic. I feel like this, like, I didn't realize that this B story was part of this A story.
I didn't either.
But I love both of them, and I remembered both of them. And I remember beats and moments, and, you know, there's so many funny things. So maybe my expectations were just a little high, but something happened near the end. Which was a little bit of a bummer for me. And in a weird way, I wish I could go back, not change a word of the script, and do it over again. Like, get a second take. Or maybe there were better takes. I don't know. So I guess it's mostly about my performance or the performances in general. Something sort of happens near the end that I was not stoked on. So I think we needed another day of rehearsal. Or maybe one day less of rehearsal. Something.
Yeah. What about you, Danielle?
I had a total change of feeling about a quarter of the way through the episode. I will be honest, at the beginning, I was like, ugh, I'm bored. I'm bored of this idea of there's a girl and Sean's been broken up with and she's going to manhandle him and there's going to be this ensorcement. I was like, God, that's weird.
Yeah,
I'm done with that. I never want to see that storyline again. But then,
guess the minute
it was revealed that it was going to be the love story between the two of you, I was hooked. Then I was like, this was all worth it. It was worth that setup to get to this, because I loved that. But at the very beginning, I was like, oh no, I'm not going to like this episode. And then, pleasantly surprised, I ended up loving the episode. But when it first started and I saw the setup, I was like, I'm not going to enjoy this. So I was pleasantly surprised. Will, your B storyline is...
Oh, it's so funny.
Just so funny. So funny.
Also, I want to go back, because we could do, I just want to see the one man show.
I know.
I think we could just do a whole episode of Boy Meets World that is you doing the one man show, because we never even got out of fifth grade or whatever. And I think it would be so funny to hear more Eric. I mean, it was like, I was sitting there going, oh, there's so many ways this could go. Like, and I want them all. Like, I don't need, I don't, and I almost wish the rest of the episode were shorter. And even with the Feeny stuff, I was like, dude, I love Bill. I love the moment, but could it be shorter so we could see more Eric?
More Eric. Just doing his one-man show.
Yes, because it could go so many ways. It could just keep getting funnier. I don't know.
No, I love it. It's so funny, Ryder, that you said you had a problem maybe at the end with your performance, because I thought comedically this was your best episode ever.
Yeah.
I think the phone calls are hysterical.
Beats,
not just those, but all the little... like the kind of subtleties you were playing.
The library.
Oh.
Oh my gosh.
Library is a fun
so
scene.
Library is great.
Funny. So fun. And Danielle, you were not, once again, used much.
Yeah.
But I thought your part I really liked this episode. I don't know if it caught me in the right mood or whatever it was, but Sue and I were howling at this last night.
Yeah, it's a fun episode. So let's jump in. We start in the school hallway. A tall blonde girl, we've been told is Sean's girlfriend, is surrounded by a group of guys as Corey and Topanga watch from a distance. Corey reveals that Sean and this girl, Jennifer, broke up this morning and she's already on the prowl. Topanga worriedly asks how Sean is doing and Corey assures her, Sean is Sean. You can't keep Sean down. And then camera zooms out and we see
basically
see that Sean is slumped against the lockers. Corey tells him to get up. He's dismal. She dumped me. She dumped me good. And I didn't even see it coming. Corey's
and this
concerned.
Is one of those I wish we had, like, because just the awkwardness of having to lie down but still be visible to the camera. It's like one of those multi-camera things. Like, do we have to go all the way on the ground? Like, you just wish you could do a single camera or bring the camera over my head.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But like, jib.
Yeah, it's just this, like, I don't know. Or just let my face not be seen. Like, if I was just talking to the sky, but because who lays like this?
I know. Also, why couldn't you just be on your stomach on, you know, facing, like, you could have been on your stomach
facing sideways.
Camera.
Yeah, it's super awkward. And I can tell that I'm, like, physically uncomfortable with it.
Right.
I don't know. This is, I think, maybe the first hint of, like, some of the stuff that bothers me, which is the obviously there's cartooniness, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just, like, I love the cartooniness when we're living in it, which of course, Will, you're just so good at. I don't feel as comfortable living in the cartooniness in a lot of the bits in this episode. There's some of it where I love, like Ben and I basically playing lovers. You're like, that clearly is like a cartoony joke that we commit to. But then there's other cartooniness, like her making out with me, falling down, me on the ground, Corey's head in the thing. Topanga coming in and yelling you up there. Like, it all just felt very like, I don't know, man. Like, it's like, I like the cartooniness if it were, but for some reason it just felt a little, like it just fell short in a lot of those beats for me. Whereas like the other cartoonists, like the human cartooniness of like Ben throwing down his towel and having baked the good, like all of that, like the human, like when it's endowed with like a reality, like acting thing, and we're allowed to like make it our own, I loved it. But when I felt like we were doing line readings or being told where to stand for a visual joke, it sucked for me. And like, it really brought up a lot of like not good emotions.
Really?
Yeah.
I can see that because all the things you mentioned were the moments that I didn't love. Like, I'm talking to you up there. I remember the line reading. I remember it. Yeah, I remember all of that.
Exactly. You can hear them, right?
And I also was like, so there were moments where what I was feeling was like, they're really wanting to lean into like, this is a farcical episode.
Right.
But like, there's so much of it that's true human, really natural funniness. And all of that stuff was great.
Yeah.
And then there were
these
other moments.
Which, to be fair, is a lot of it, actually.
We didn't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then the other moments I just didn't think we needed. They could have just been more real.
Her kissing thing is really bizarre.
I'm telling you, I'm over the ensorcel thing. I'm so
but it's also just
so
constant hand.
Watch this. I'm the only person who could kiss you in this totally benign, bland way.
The nose wiggle, the nose.
The nose kiss.
I was like, Jesus.
Oh, I know. I wrote, is this sexy? What is happening here?
That stuff was very, very strange.
Do you guys have any memories of working with Christiana Loken?
You know what? Not really. She came onto Girl Meets World.
Yep.
And it was great to see her. Actually, she and I like talked a lot and it was awesome
she
to
was
like
great.
Hang. I wasn't there that episode. I just came by to visit for like a little bit.
Who was she on Girl Meets World?
She played
herself, right? Minkus's.
She played Minkus's wife.
But as this character.
As this character.
So
yes.
Minkus marries.
She goes on to marry
Minkus. Plays herself, by the way.
I know.
What I meant is she plays the same character.
So she does not play
Christiana
Loken.
She played the Terminator. That's the part,
that's
right? That's herself.
This typecast is the Terminator killer from the future.
That's hysterical. she was so great. But it was funny because I actually didn't really remember working with her that much. And looking at this, I was like, I don't know. There's just it's funny, but I just felt stilted again. Like I wanted there to be natural chemistry between me and her, not this like beat over here. Let's have our beat over here. You know, and when we're actually just kind of talking to each other, or she's like, there are times where that is, but all the kissing, all the physical stuff just felt like, oh, we're hitting the beats, and I can kind of tell that I'm not happy with it, which is kind of funny, I guess. Though. But
yeah. One of the reasons that I liked it is because it also brackets the actual chemistry that Corey and Sean have.
That's funny. That's a good read.
You know, it's like there's he's so right. uncomfortable with right. her,
that's
but
funny.
So natural right. with him that it is. It's like you don't.
That's a layered read. Will.
Yeah,
I like
but
that.
It's true. It's like
I didn't take it that way, but yeah.
Totally. None of it feels stilted when you're with Corey. None of it feels right. set up when you're with Corey. It's so natural
funny.
And beautiful.
That's funny.
But when you're with her, it feels awkward and weird. I thought that was great.
Yeah, it's funny. I didn't really have any memories from doing this episode with her, but when she was on Girl Meets World, really enjoyed being around her, enjoyed talking with her, but don't really remember too much. I mean, I don't have that much to do with her this week. I'm in a couple little scenes with her, but not any real.
What's cool is that she seems to be having fun.
Yeah.
Which is really cool Great. For a guest star, first of all. Just, you know, whenever a guest star comes in and they seem to be having fun, you're like, you own this.
Yeah.
But also, like, this is one of those roles that, like, you need somebody who's confident and can come in and do that. Otherwise, this whole thing doesn't work. And she nails it. I love that.
Does she come back? Is she one of the people that kidnaps Sean and puts him in the cabin?
She must be, right?
Is she one of them?
I would hope so.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's her, Larissa, and Lindsay. So I'm pretty sure it's the three of them. It makes total sense. Yeah.
Gotcha. This episode is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Listen, Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their tushies.
Especially when they start really moving.
With Huggies Little Movers, you get their best-fitting diaper with its curved and stretchy fit.
That's right. So no matter what kind of mover you've got, they'll feel protected and comfy while their little tushy wiggles and jiggles all around.
Huggies Little Movers has curves designed to fit all baby curves and helps provide up to 12-hour protection against leaks.
So make the switch to Huggies Little Movers today.
We got you, baby.
We talk a lot about moms on this podcast and how important they are to us.
Absolutely. Without Jen Fischel, what pictures would we post on our social media?
But above and beyond all the incredible mom things they did for us, laundry, dinners, let us travel to Los Angeles alone to chase our dreams of acting. Will, what else was your mom doing?
My mom was also running all three courts in Connecticut while authoring books.
Wow. Well, whether your mom was a legal trailblazer or just the greatest source of inspiration and care in the world, this Mother's Day, she deserves some flowers.
You're right, and that's why I'm sending mine Farm Fresh Flowers from Bouqs.
That's short for bouquets. And while I'm teaching you things, how about 25% off your entire Bouqs order so you can join us in treating our mothers to a beautiful arrangement?
Love it.
Here's why I like the Bouqs company. They are different. Their flowers are cut fresh and sourced directly from the best flower farms, so they last way longer. They even have flowers grown on the side of a volcano.
That's really cool. Bouqs has modern designs and unique flowers you can't find anywhere else. Your mom is unique, so she deserves flowers just as special.
And Bouqs is simple. I went online, picked the delivery date, and I'm done.
Mother's Day is May 12th. Don't miss the chance to thank your mom. Order your Bouqs now.
And with 25% off, you can send some to mom, wife, aunt, and even grandma.
Go to Bouqs.com and use promo code WORLD for 25% off.
That's Bouqs.com, promo code WORLD.
Bouqs, promo code WORLD.
When it comes to Pod Meets World, we're synonymous with two things. Watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago and loving Hyundai.
If we could, we would take Hyundai to prom.
Technically, Hyundai is more visible on this show than Topanga.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to a 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
Say teched out again.
Nope, that was a one-time show. Snooze, you lose.
Well, either way, the Hyundai Ioniq 5 is a tech-forward electric SUV.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
So that means your car won't die out like the Matthews family vehicle on New Year's Eve, forcing me to miss out on kissing supermodel Rebecca Alexa in front of all of Philadelphia.
And with available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car. Backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only. So Corey looks concerned. Look what they've done to my boy. Topanga squats down to Sean. I think you can do a lot better than Jennifer Bassett. Sean earnestly asks, you think so? Corey interjects, Topanga, have you looked at her? Topanga glances over. She's pretty. She's tall. She drives a new red convertible. Oh, hey,
this is
I'd
just
go out
big
with her.
Big mistake that everybody makes when they're young. When somebody breaks up with somebody, keep your mouth shut.
Just don't say anything.
They're going to get back together.
Absolutely.
Or if not, it doesn't help the situation. They don't want to be, you do not want to hear about how your ex sucked. I mean, you think you do,
right.
But you really don't.
Biggest mistake.
Everybody makes this mistake at some point in their life. They turn to somebody and they're like, oh, thank God you got out of that relationship. Blah. And it just always backfires. It never works.
There's a great line that Seinfeld says where he says breaking up with somebody is like knocking over a Coke machine. You don't do it in one thing. You got to rock it back and forth first. And then, then it goes over.
Right.
It's true.
That's funny. It's also the same reason you don't ever really want to tell your best friends the worst qualities of your significant other, because you're probably just venting.
Yeah,
and then your best friends are like, I can't stand that person you're with.
And
you're like, no, you're not really supposed to remember that. I just wanted to vent. Don't remember that. Super
terrible.
It's like
complaining about your own family, like to your wife. Or your husband.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
You can complain about your family, but the second they say something about you, like, your mom does do this thing. You're like, whoa.
Don't ever talk about my mom that way.
That's my mama. What are you doing?
That's so true.
Right?
Exactly. Corey tries consoling Sean. I didn't want to say this when you were going out with her, but she's one stuck up, conceited girl. Her nose is way up in the air. And quite frankly, I don't think it's her real nose. Sean's hopeful about this as Corey reassures him. It's plastic, just like her personality. Sean hears Corey's words of encouragement and finally stands up and walks right up to Jennifer. He confidently yells to her, you know what I think? I think you're conceited. Conceited and stuck up and something about your nose. Jennifer panics, touching her nose. What is he talking about? Sean stutters. Jennifer asks, who said something about my nose? They both turn and look at Corey, whose mouth is hanging open in surprise. So it was your best friend, Corey, who made you say these bad, bad things? Sean scoffs, like I'd ever tell you. And then she ensorcels him with a kiss. And Sean immediately breaks. Corey Matthews.
Arm kiss. She's doing. So she is maybe casting
there's
an actual
a hair,
spell. Because there's a weird, there's a, weird big thing
I'm
she
telling
does every
you,
time.
It's the women dominating physically ensorcelment shtick we have done on this show. I am
and I
bored.
Think this is what
of.
Maitland does, right? Like, isn't this what Maitland's
her
whole
entire
bit
character
is
based on?
Is that she's like this tall, big woman who like controls the guys, right, and ensorcels them left and right.
I don't
so
know.
Boring.
I don't know that there's tall. Anything more boring for a character to be. I don't like it. And this episode started with it and I was like, oh no, I'm in for an episode I'm not going to like. And then it becomes a love story between Corey and Sean. And I was like, turned. I'm happy.
I just wish that like, you know, because you know what it said in the script, which is then she kisses him.
Yes.
And like, I wish we had the freedom to just figure out what that is.
Right.
Two actors figure out what it is that she could do to get. And instead, it feels so stilted. It feels so staged. It feels so here's what you're going to do this with your arm. And it's just like, and you're watching her do a choreography that feels inhuman. And
weird.
I feel like I'm hitting my marks and doing the thing. And it just, you know, like it would have been so great to just be allowed some breathing room. And you just don't feel it. You feel instead the like, oh, okay. And you can remove yourself and see the cartoon for what it is and laugh. And it's fine. But you know, looking at it with a critical eye as the actor in it, I'm like, oh, come on, this could have been so much better.
Yeah. You wonder, too, how much of it is that, because one of the things that is bumping me is that it's just not sexy. It actually isn't, it doesn't feel like you guys have that great of chemistry.
No.
So part of me wonders if the problem is in allowing you guys to figure it out, if it would have come across as too sexual. Like it would have seemed
that,
maybe
that might be true. That's actually
maybe
a good call.
That maybe if she had actually walked up to you, that it has to be this. Let's sell sex in a
like in a choreographed way. Yes, in order.
That's
to,
a really good call.
You know,
you're right. Yeah, because if she had actually been like
seductive,
yeah, seductive or like a dominatrix,
yes, like, in a way it would have been a little like that maybe it would have been like, okay, what are we watching here Friday night, 8:30 or 9:30, depending on where we
really
are.
That's a really good point, Danielle. Yeah, you're right. Okay.
You know,
I retract most of what I said.
No, no, you don't have to retract it. I'm just in our discerning eye stuff, giving the all of the thought to what the reasons are. It could have been that. So,
well, here's my main question is like, what is I get is the implication that she wants Sean back just because he criticizes her and then she wants him back? Or like, why does she just immediately change her mind? And like, I was kind of waiting for that to become a thing, like, like somebody Topanga or Ben Corey to say, yeah, see, you insult a woman, she comes. Right. I don't know, like, because it seems like the implication is that now she's going to own me to get back at Corey, which is kind of funny, but like.
Maybe the idea is the reason the relationship wasn't going to work, the reason she doesn't want to be with you is because she didn't like your best friend. And so now she's like, listen, the reason we're not working is because of him.
Right.
So I'm willing to give us a chance, but you have to get rid of him. And it's that kind of idea.
I wanted that to be explicit.
I agree. I wish
like
it would have explicit.
Because I just kept being like, oh, we're just back in the relationship. And I don't know. It was just a little like, what? Why is she so obsessed with this? And like I don't know.
They just are just trying to get to you and Corey.
Exactly. Just to get to the joke.
And that's exactly it. Is that once they got into that, it's like, this is clearly why we're here.
That's all that it was about, is just getting there.
I wonder if we could have just started with me in a relationship with a woman who didn't want us to be friends anymore.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
That's probably where it should have started. You didn't need any of the stuff lying in the hallway. And it should have just been, Corey looking at the two of you together.
So ensorcelled Sean breaks, Corey Matthews, son of Alan and Amy, grandson of Nana and Sam. Corey shouts, how could you sell out my Nana? Which is very funny. Jennifer
decides. The editing is weird. It like holds on Ben too long. I was like, you hit the joke and then you get out. And for it kind of lingers. I was like, oh, is that the end of the scene? Is he going to say something?
It held for a laugh there.
I've never, I've never felt like the awkward editing on our show as like, much before. And I was like, there's a little awkward editing going on. Yeah.
Jennifer decides to flirt with Sean. Maybe there could still be something between us. She grabs his head, spins him in a circle, towers over him, and pushes him against the staircase. And then they nose to nose kiss, which I guess is sexy. I don't think so. I don't know what's going on there. Yeah, you're like, ooh.
I look like, we're doing the
Sean thing. Caves. Well, I'd be willing to give it another try, just as long as you're not mad at Corey. Jennifer puts her arm around him and they walk away. No, Sean, he's your best friend. How could I ever come between you and your best friend? And as they pass Corey and Topanga, Jennifer quickly holds up her hand in a claw and hisses at him.
And I feel like she's about to break. I feel like she has to cut it short, because if she holds the moment too long, she's going to break.
She was
going to laugh. Yeah, I don't know. It's funny.
Corey asks Topanga if she saw that, and she confirms she did. Corey panics, asking her what it means, and she tells him, nothing good for you.
Nothing good for you.
And then we go to our Surfer Acid commercial break, and we come back. We're in Chubby's. Corey sits with Sean. What does it mean when a girl goes, hiss? Sean shrugs it off. Come on, she was just being playful. Corey asks, playful, like a spider when it catches a fly and sucks out its head meat? Sean defends her by explaining she was upset after all the terrible things he said about her. Corey corrects him. I said them to you to make my best friend feel better about being dumped. May I speak freely? Sean looks up and blurts out, I don't think that's wise. But Corey continues anyway, just as we see Jennifer walk up behind him. I think Jennifer, or should I say Zathrak the Undead, is a stuck-up, manipulative, cold-blooded... Corey finally catches Sean's cues and stops, giving us a classic season 2 joke by nervously asking.
Are we keeping a tally? What are we up to? Number 5? 6?
Five? Is 10? 10 times? Are they right behind?
She's right behind me, isn't she? Jennifer says hello, and he sticks his hand up. All hail Zathrak. Jennifer pulls Sean away and plays with his hair. And this is where we get a great look at the autographed OJ jersey.
Yes, I saw that in the background as well.
Priorities. All we care about on Pod Meets World anymore
is OJ jersey.
Sorry, guys. It's Jensen jumping in. Can I give you a small update on the OJ jersey?
Yeah,
please.
Okay. It possibly is, because on the arm we see a Trojan. Like, that's obviously a big thing. But there were OJ years when he was on USC that the arms also had yellow lines, kind of right at the shoulder or right around the bicep, somewhere in between the two places. So it is still possibly an OJ jersey, especially with the Trojan. It's just not a direct connection because it's missing the stripes.
Got it. Okay. So it would for sure have been a nod to OJ Simpson if there were stripes on the jersey, but there is not.
But it's still very hard to read. John Adams' high colors.
Right.
But so were they the Trojans?
No. They were the... Do we know? Did we ever know what their
Patriots
mascot was?
We know what the mascot was when we got to college was the Penguin.
Right. I don't know.
I don't know if we ever had...
Melissa? I really have Patriots in my head, but I'm not sure. Like, Easton, this is your job.
Ugh, yeah. Super fan.
Super fan.
Your job as super fan is to know.
Fan.
Listen,
mild fan.
Melissa, mild to medium. We nominated you as the universal voice of the fandom. Please, Melissa, reach out to us. Let us know what was the mascot at John Adams High. Oh, the Patriot Spirit was the name of the paper.
So the Patriots is probably a good guess.
Yeah,
the Patriots is a good one.
But I wonder if they just picked the colors and the easiest thing to buy was an OJ jersey.
Right? I still think it's an OJ
jersey.
Once
you knew the colors.
Yeah, I still think it's an OJ jersey.
Yeah, I think it is too.
All right, bye.
So Jennifer says they've been working so hard to make this relationship work, but there are just some people who only want to tear them apart. She pleads, I don't think we should allow those negative presences in our lives, do you? Sean tries to stand his ground, saying he doesn't see it that way. Jennifer grabs him and kisses him, laying him down in a booth. The camera stays on Corey, who watches them in surprise.
So this is the exact same scene, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, it's doing all the same things.
Yes, you're still just being ensorcelled. Yes.
Literally could have started with this scene and found a way to insert Topanga, and we would have had probably the same,
Yep.
Yep.
I was wondering what was wrong. I was like, why? Oh, and now that you're spelling it out, like, we literally just watched all these beats happen.
It's essentially the same scene twice.
Yeah.
We hear Sean exclaim, wow, suddenly everything is so clear. Jennifer asks if he sees her point, and Sean tells her, yes, you're a really good debater. Jennifer and Sean sit up, and she says, I think you should tell Corey you can't see him anymore. Sean argues, but we've been best friends our whole lives. How am I supposed to say, Corey, you're out of my life? Jennifer answers by pulling him back in for yet another makeout session, laying in the booth, and Sean manages to ask Corey if he can come over. Corey excitedly jumps up. Maybe this is good news. He immediately gets uncomfortable by what he sees in the booth, and this is where I was like, I don't mean to be a downer, but I'm bored. Just bored here.
Yeah. And I think it's not just that it's like the sort of now predictable stereotype or archetypal moment of the insert. It's also that it's a repeat.
Story-wise,
we have not made any progress yet. Right. So not only do we have a beat that kind of makes you roll your eyes, we get it twice for no reason when it doesn't actually help. So
that's
interesting.
Absolutely right.
Yeah. But the show kind of starts now.
Right, exactly.
Now the episode starts.
And now we're into the episode.
Yes, exactly.
So then later at Chubby's, an employee is closing down Chubby's as Topanga leans against a booth and stares down at Corey, now slumped on the floor, a call back to Sean's cold open. She tells him to get up, and Corey sadly explains, he dumped me. He dumped me good. And thank God that was a short scene, because I'm wearing a jacket in it, and so no good would have come from it.
No acting.
No.
You had a jacket on
for most
of this episode.
Which is why.
Which is why. Not Danielle's best.
Not a great episode for me.
You're not going to be a movie star.
No.
This is why it was hard for me to answer that question.
Listen, Ryder,
because movie stars can handle jackets.
You know what?
But Ryder can't, because he keeps losing them.
True.
Very strange. What jackets mean to all of us.
And then we're in the Matthews kitchen. Amy and Alan walk in from a night out, and Eric, who was having some midnight pie and milk.
A little bit of pie.
Okay, can we talk about milk? Like,
I know.
Do you guys just pour yourself a glass of milk?
Also, and I'm like, so much milk. It was so like 16 milk. Ounces of milk, and I was like,
so
that's
much milk.
Too much
I poured
milk.
Poured myself a glass of milk that size last night.
Really?
I do almost every night. I love
it. Wow.
Really?
Are you 7 years
milk?
Old?
Like, it's milk. Milk is good for you at any age.
You're a 7-year-old boy.
Milk is good for you at any age.
And
you got your daddy, your stuffed teddy, your giant teddy bear.
The teddy bear is in the closet.
And were you watching cartoons?
Do you drink your milk out of a
twirly
straw?
You were watching cartoons.
I was watching an animated feature film.
Okay.
Did you have a swirly straw in your milk?
No, I drank my milk. First of all, the idea that milk is for children is completely wrong. Milk is for everybody. You always need the calcium and the vitamin D. Jeez. You guys, it's all fun and games till you get osteoporosis.
This episode is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Listen, Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their tushies.
Especially when they start really moving.
With Huggies Little Movers, you get their best-fitting diaper with its curved and stretchy fit.
That's right. So no matter what kind of mover you've got, they'll feel protected and comfy while their little tushy wiggles and jiggles all around.
Huggies Little Movers has curves designed to fit all baby curves and helps provide up to 12-hour protection against leaks.
So make the switch to Huggies Little Movers today.
We got you, baby.
We talk a lot about moms on this podcast and how important they are to us.
Absolutely. Without Jen Fischel, what pictures would we post on our social media?
But above and beyond all the incredible mom things they did for us, laundry, dinners, let us travel to Los Angeles alone to chase our dreams of acting. Will, what else was your mom doing?
My mom was also running all three courts in Connecticut while authoring books.
Wow. Well, whether your mom was a legal trailblazer or just the greatest source of inspiration and care in the world, this Mother's Day, she deserves some flowers.
You are right, and that's why I'm sending mine Farm Fresh Flowers from Books.
That's short for bouquets. And while I'm teaching you things, how about 25% off your entire Books order so you can join us in treating our mothers to a beautiful arrangement?
Love it.
Here's why I like the Books Company. They are different. Their flowers are cut fresh and sourced directly from the best flower farms, so they last way longer. They even have flowers grown on the side of a volcano.
That's really cool. Books has modern designs and unique flowers you can't find anywhere else. Your mom is unique, so she deserves flowers just as special.
And Books is simple. I went online, picked the delivery date, and I'm done.
Mother's Day is May 12th. Don't miss the chance to thank your mom. Order your Books now.
And with 25% off, you can send some to mom, wife, aunt, and even grandma.
Go to Books.com and use promo code WORLD for 25% off.
That's Books.com, promo code WORLD.
Books, promo code WORLD.
When it comes to Podmeets World, we're synonymous with two things: watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago and loving Hyundai.
If we could, we would take Hyundai to prom.
Technically, Hyundai is more visible on this show than Topanga.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to a 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
Say teched out again.
Nope, that was a one-time show. Snooze, you lose.
Well, either way, the Hyundai Ioniq 5 is a tech-forward electric SUV.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
So that means your car won't die out like the Matthews family vehicle on New Year's Eve, forcing me to miss out on kissing supermodel Rebecca Alexa in front of all of Philadelphia.
And with available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car, backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only. Eric, who's eating midnight pie, scolds them. It's about time you kids got home. It's almost 11 o'clock. I was worried sick. I had Feeny looking for you. I called the police. Amy asks, really? And Eric admits, nah, I didn't even know you left. So, nice time. Amy says they went to a one-woman show at the theater. Eric asks, juggling? Alan corrects him. No, she sat on a stool and told the remarkable story of her life.
Well, he pours himself a glass of milk. That's where I was like, what are we doing?
Really? Milk.
Two grown men? We're all just going to sit around drinking milk?
Sue had
Amy
milk
has
last night too.
Decency to have a cup of tea or something.
I mean,
in
Sue had milk last night too.
There are a few meals that I think call for a glass of milk. I will
like
say
dessert pie. I guess yeah, it's kind guess, of a I rich guess like
yeah. No. Also spaghetti with red sauce for some reason.
It's like a soothing counterpoint to the spaghetti.
The idea that you're trying to justify milk. I don't understand what's happening, people.
Yeah, it's super.
This podcast sponsored by milk.
I was the one who did the milk commercial.
That's right.
You did.
You did.
It tastes so good.
You did.
Eric jokes, you couldn't afford a real show, huh? Alan hands the tickets to Eric and shows him the price. $30? You spent $30 to listen to some lady on a stool? Alan tells him it was a 300-seat theater and it was completely sold out. Eric's in shock, trying to figure out the math. That's like 300 times 30. Amy says the show had even been sold out for months. Eric ponders this idea, and then we get a dissolve, which is like a distant cousin to the optical flip.
Yes.
And we see Eric slowly pressing one key at a time on his laptop with crumpled papers all around
his laptop slash typing. 80s word processor.
Yes,
I mean, I guess like laptops really did 64. Still look like that.
Yeah,
right?
It did. That was probably cutting edge at the
time. Oh, yeah,
that's
probably
I love that you have the printer on the table, too. Like, you got to immediately be able to print out. It's like, yeah. Show the writer at work.
And crumpled up, there's always the crumpled up papers.
Yes, crumpled up pages.
Yeah,
like a typewriter.
Like, why do you need to print it out to read it? Like, it's... Oh, great. I love it. It's so clearly a... Because Michael Jacobs was a playwright. Yep. And yeah. I like, do you guys remember Jeff McCracken's story about Michael writing his first play?
No.
They were roommates. And yeah. And Michael, because Michael started as an actor. They were both actors.
Cheaters or whatever it was called?
Yeah, Cheaters, and which became his movie. But Michael like came home from an audition, was like, that's it. Because he had such a bad audition or gotten really close to a part. I forget. We'll have to ask Jeff what it was. There was like a famous part that Michael got close on, whatever. He was so pissed and he was like, that's it. And grabbed his typewriter and went into the other room. And over like the course of a weekend, like wrote didn't emerge until he had written his play. And apparently like it was this scene. Like it was typing away. And Jeff was like reading the pages as they were coming out and going like, this is funny, Michael. So there you go.
Funny.
So this is a little window into playwriting.
Guessing he was typing faster than Eric was.
Yeah. And had a typewriter.
And had
an actual typewriter,
Corey walks up and curiously reads over his shoulder, Eric Matthews and look at me, a one-woman show. Mm. Eric quickly corrects himself. Oh, yeah, for me, this would be man. Corey grabs the script and notices Eric is writing a play about himself. Eric asks if he can bounce the opening off of him, and Corey quickly responds, let me bounce this off of you, throwing the script at him.
Which is clearly, I think, a Boy Meets World script. That they're using, yes.
Yeah, but that joke is just...
It's a terrible joke.
This
terrible
is like,
terrible
speaking
joke.
Of head off, right. I was like, cool, can we... This is,
can we get
this is one of the few times I'm like, wow, come on, guys, let's punch it up here. Like, we're sticking with this one?
Yeah.
Cool. I know.
Jerk store,
yeah, exactly. Eric argues that people will care about this play because he is a human life. He dramatically looks off into the distance, romanticizing his life, and then states,
amazing
wake up,
camera
damn
move.
You. I know.
Amazing camera move. Yeah. Yes. A little dolly move, which is hard to do on those camera, the way those
on
cameras
those
move.
I
yeah,
know.
On those pads. Yeah. So
pretty,
cool.
Pretty
kudos
cool.
to Jeff McCracken. Yeah.
I know. I love that he found little ways to be creative there. I don't understand the wake up, damn you joke. Do either of you?
Corey was asleep.
Corey's already fallen asleep. Like he's committed. Like,
is he pretending to be asleep there?
Yeah. He was asleep. He's like this and. So is it wake?
Got it. Okay. I didn't notice that. I was like, I don't understand the joke. Okay. Well, now I feel like an idiot. But anyway,
well,
didn't get it. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you should.
I mean, a little bit.
Maybe. Thanks. I love you, Bob.
That was a pretty good joke.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, because the camera move sold it. You know?
Right.
I like single camera stuff. I like where there's visual jokes. And this is like one of the few times we've done like a, I don't know.
You're also just coming off of let me throw this at you. So any joke sounds
any true. Joke. Or
I also just couldn't take my eyes off of Eric. I did not look at Corey. So
that's the point.
Yeah. I know. But so I didn't know. Yeah. Anyway, wake up, damn you. Okay.
Right. And Will's so handsome with his hair in this episode.
I know.
You are like,
take your eyes off me. Couldn't we all heard it.
Everybody heard it.
Everybody heard that. That's right.
The phone rings and Eric answers, telling the person on the other line, nope, no Dory here. Corey runs over. It's for him. He takes the phone from his confused brother. Sean? Sean scolds him. You're supposed to call me Don. Corey asks, why? Is Jennifer there? Sean corrects him again. Jennifer.
It's so ridiculous and outlandish and crazy. And I loved every
and
second
also,
of it.
And also so exactly what I think Sean would do. It's exactly the way Sean would handle it. I love it so much.
Just these phone call scenes are just the best.
Oh, I mean, and by the way, this is our first ever split screen on Boy Meets World. Which
is it the first one?
No.
Yes,
I think we did one. I swear, didn't we do one when like Eric was stuck?
Yes, huh?
I'm the 7-year-old. Yes, huh?
Yes, huh?
Go ahead, writer. When was the other one?
I thought Eric was stuck somewhere on a payphone. I don't know. For some, I have it in my head that we already because I feel like we pointed out. Oh, this is our first split screen at another episode.
Was it on the road trip at the sprinkle place?
Yeah, well, no. It was like either that. No, I think it was earlier. I think it was like first or second season. When I'm thinking the Susan Estelle Jensen episode, It's a Wonderful Nighter. The car breaks down and Eric's stuck on, you know, I don't know. For some reason, I have it in my head that we did a split screen. I remember Chet, being like, is this our first?
When Chet calls in, is that also a split screen?
That's a split screen.
All right. Well, then I rescind what I said. I take it
back. So you've gotten a bunch of stuff wrong this episode.
Go ahead, we'll take over. You host the show.
I would love to. So here we go. Scene, I don't know where we are. I don't have it written in front of me at all.
So he says, no, she's at the mall. And then it was literally this moment where I went, okay, I know none of the feelings I had about the beginning of this episode. I'm no longer bored. I'm fully hook, line, and sinker. I'm in. I love it. This is why this episode exists. To see Sean and Corey being star-crossed lovers. It's so funny, and I love it now. So Corey asks, how could he just let some girl tell him he can't see his best friend? It's wrong, just wrong. There's silence on the other line, and Corey asks if Sean's still there. Sean responds, I was just listening to the sound of your voice and thinking about the old days.
Your reads on these things are so spot on good. I mean, just, you're like riding that line so perfectly.
Well, you just commit to it as a lover, you know,
exactly.
And like this, and you play
like
the reality of it, like
lover and all.
I know,
that.
But that's always comedy when taken seriously is the best, right? Yeah. Characters take the serious, and that's where it was so fun. I remember just being like, "This is so fun."
If there's ever a subject teenage writer Strong didn't need a whole lot of direction about, it was about teenage love and being
torn
from your lover. Lovesick. I have to be on this stupid TV show while my lover is up north.
That's
and
hysterical.
I'm 13 years
so
old.
True. I was about to get into the seventh grade dance. Yes.
But
so
do you, writer, remember working with Jeff at all on being like directed about the subtext or anything?
No, I just remember Ben and I loving the scene. Yeah. Like I remember loving doing the scene, and I feel like I was able to see Ben. Somehow we coordinated when we like did our moves. And I'm not sure if they brought a monitor or if where they positioned me, I could see him so we could do that.
Yeah.
But I just remember discovering, like, I mean, I think we already knew how funny it was, but I remember living the comedy and just having so much fun. Like, I just remember, you know, this is, I feel like these last four episodes have been me and Ben
having
so much fun and like, it's just we've clicked into this gear as actors, as co-actors that I remember, you know, we had a mind meld. We had a mind meld as actors and we were always having fun and we always had each other's backs. And there was just this complete sense of confidence and comfort with each other.
I remember this killing at the run throughs.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Like
every
just
time.
Crushing at the run throughs. It was so good. Yeah.
So the audience is hooting and hollering and they love Quran or Shory. What would it be? What would your relationship name be? Shory?
I like Shory. Yeah,
Shory.
Shory's
probably
better,
what it is. Okay. So
Ben would want top billing though. That would probably be.
It'd probably be Quran.
It'd be Shory on the page until the first rewrite, and then it'd be Quran.
I don't know that they'd want Quran.
Quran. They might not want Quran yet.
Corey shakes his head. I gotta see you. Sean says, no, that would be impossible. Corey asks, because of her? He threatens to show up at Sean's if he refuses to come to his house. Sean gives in. I'll see you, but just this once. Corey obliges. That's all I'm asking for. Sean says, the library, tomorrow morning, 8:00. Corey sighs. The library it is. Then I'll step aside forever. And the audience is loving every second as Corey and Sean go to
hang
up.
And then we do the hang up.
But then they pull it back up to their ear in case the other one says something else. And the audience is still just like reacting to every single second of it. Corey finally hangs up the phone, turning to a stunned Eric, who has heard the entire phone call. He flatly states, I want my own room.
Yeah.
Gay panic.
My face is pretty
gay
funny.
Panic, but it's pretty
but it's pretty funny.
I mean, it's just you need the joke and you need the button, and Will's seriousness is hysterical.
Great.
And like, yeah. Oh.
Pretty funny.
I don't know what if there's a better joke, but it's funny.
It is funny.
I want my own room.
So then we're in the school library. Sean sits quietly. When Jennifer walks into the library, she's been looking all over and Sean is very surprised to see her. He tells her he's been studying and she admires that he's putting his time to better use now that he's not constantly with Corey. She notices Sean has a cinnamon bun with a blue bow and a C on it and she questions what it's for. He awkwardly explains, it stands for C. I knew you'd be here. And he hands it to her. Just then Topanga walks up and Sean asks if she knows his girlfriend. Topanga and Jennifer cut him off, immediately giving each other a quick hi and a very phony girl-to-girl, hey.
Oh, great.
That's really funny.
That's really great funny.
Moment. It's great really moment. Funny. It's like you like get that. The entire history of these characters yep. and everything you need to know about them without really funny.
Really
that's
funny.
That's multi-layered and like only in the performance. Yeah.
Yep.
I
do
love
remember
it.
How that happened, Danielle? Like, was it written that way or...
I do think it was written that way. Yes, I think it was written that way. And I think...
I would love to see the script. I wonder what it says in the script. Like how do you describe that? Because right. it's a
they
very
give each other
good...
a short high or a curt high. I would imagine it's something like that.
Right. A phony high. Something.
A phony high. I mean, because it is... Yeah. And I do... The only thing I kind of remember is that she and I really enjoyed... figuring out exactly what that was going to be and it and us just both knowing at the exact same time exactly what that is. You go, hi.
And then they
through
turn
a
away.
Fake smile.
Oh my God.
Hi. Yeah.
Hi.
Anyway. I love that moment. Topanga tells Sean she just came from the classics section, emphasizing classics, old favorites. There's something there you might be interested in. He gets the hint. He tells Jennifer he's going to go check out that book. Corey whisper yells Sean's name. Just 2 feet away from Jennifer, still right in her eye line. Sean answers back, Corey, is that you? Corey sarcastically says, no, it's the audiobook section, you moron. Sean moves a few books out of the way and the boys are face to face. Sean explains he couldn't come alone because you know who wouldn't let him. Although he did intend to come alone.
He was supposed to be there alone.
He was actually there alone at first showed up.
She did let me.
He's worried she suspects. Corey assures him, I understand she's important to you. Sean nods. They both knew this would happen eventually. Once they got girlfriends, they would have less time for each other. Corey asks, that Cinnabon was for me though, right? Sean giggles shyly. Corey.
God, just the way you say his name. Oh.
It's so cute and I love it. It's just the cutest.
Corey. Oh, Corey. So good.
Corey pleads, we gotta meet. Sean questions where and Corey answers, Paris. Sean argues, that's the first place she'd look. Sean says they need to go someplace a woman would never expect. And Corey suggests the Three Stooges.
I mean, this is just great dialogue.
Brilliant.
It's so funny.
Brilliant. So good. They try to come up with a plan. And then Jennifer walks up to check on Sean since he's been gone an awfully long time. She asks if he is here. Sean laughs. I have no idea of any he of whom you speak, run. It's just so great.
Nope. Run right through the joke in the perfect way. Yeah. That's what I'm telling you. You were hitting beats. You were hitting comedy beats in this one that I don't recall you hitting in previous episodes.
You're right, Will. This feels like an absolute elevation of his skills.
Yes, just straight up comedy. It was great.
Mm. Really good. Jennifer searches for Corey through the bookshelf as he dodges her just in time frantically. Sean concludes, I told you he wasn't there. She believes him and asks Sean to walk her to French class. She grabs his shoulder. Ooh, you're so tense. I'll sit behind you and rub your shoulders. She grabs his hand and leads him out of the library as he looks longingly back at Corey. Corey watches them leave and sighs. I used to sit behind him. And then we're in the Matthews backyard. Eric walks out with a large script in his hand and we get to see the second Feeny call ever.
Feeny call, take
and
two.
This was kind it's of progressing. The Feeny call. This was,
You're inching your way
right there.
See,
getting
that's
there.
What you guys said the last one was the Feeny call. I feel like we're taking this in stages. I feel, I wouldn't, the Feeny call has not happened yet, but the setup and now we're building on it. Like,
the Feeny call has been laid and we are getting to the, what we all know
building
and love is
ham
the,
with it.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Feeny, crouched in his garden, is startled by Eric's scream. Eric says he needs a favor. He wants Feeny to read the play he wrote. Feeny's wide-eyed at the statement. It's 400 pages of a one-man show. Feeny responds, no, don't care. Eric says he even mentions Feeny, then starts to read his play to show him. It starts off with his cross-country road trip, and he has Feeny take over with the next line. The hot wind howled like a kind of howling hot windy thing.
It seemed like Bill was having fun in this episode too. I mean, you can kind of see when he's starting to enjoy himself.
Yep.
And he seems to be at that point now where he's actually having a good time with
He seems to be having fun.
I really
like
noticing that. Yeah.
Eric has rented out a little theater and he has complimentary ticket for Feeny. Eric adds, if you have any friends that are play types, can you do me a favor and sell 50 or 100 of these? Feeny looks at the ticket. $30 each? Eric lets him in on a secret. Well, the matinee's $22.50, but I kind of pull back on my performance a little bit. Feeny wishes him luck, only able to mutter the words, "Wow." And then we're in the Matthews kitchen. Corey's making an extravagant meal when Alan walks down, asking if he's expecting company. Amy tells him it's adorable. He's been at this all afternoon. Corey's panicked. Dinner was supposed to be ready at 6:30 sharp, but it's 7:02 and still nowhere to be seen. Topanga shows up at the back door with a pie in her hands. Amy tells her, "You have no idea how much Corey loves you." Alan pulls Amy to the living room so they can get out of the lovebird's way. Topanga apologizes for being late. The pie took forever. Corey admits they both wasted their time. Sean still hasn't shown up. Topanga assures he'll be there, and Corey sassily tells her, "In the meantime, I'll just stick my beef brochettes back in the oven until they're ruined."
Throws the thing down.
Oh, God. He tosses his apron. It's so well done. Topanga has to leave, but she reminds Corey to lighten up. Just then, the phone rings, and Corey hesitates. He tells Topanga he wants Sean to worry for a change. When the phone continues to ring, he sighs, "Who am I kidding?" before running over to answer it. And then we're back in the split screen with Sean on the other line, now holding a tennis racket, wearing a polo with a sweater vest, and
favorite aspect of this episode is that I am becoming a yuppie.
Yes.
It's never referenced, but that I am dressed like this, and that I care, and that I'm carrying a trophy in the next scene is one of the funniest things. It's like, because we never have to mention it. Oh my God. It's like, I love that. I just wanted more of that. Like, yes. I wish there had been a little bit more of, like, even in the library scene, if I had already started to be like dressed differently.
Right.
And like, if I could go back, I would have fought for a little bit more of because it is so funny.
Yes.
Like, what is happening to Sean?
He's just becoming
more and more of this, like, you know, Brad with her. Like, yes. I just love it. I love it.
The trophy thing is my favorite thing of the entire episode.
Yeah.
Where it's just never mentioned.
I've won a trophy. Like, I've won a trophy good at tennis. I'm really getting into it.
Yeah. You won a trophy playing tennis and it's never brought up. It's great.
God. Oh my God. It made me.
I love it.
Killed me.
So funny.
And I didn't remember that at all, by the way.
No, me neither.
So the second I popped it, I was like, why am I wearing it? That's funny.
Yep.
That's funny. And like, it's a subtle joke because they just talk about her being stuck up in that first scene. Otherwise, they never really reference her character being rich or whatever, but I just love it.
Yeah.
Sean's moving up in the world, man.
Too much sweaters. He tells Corey he can't make it tonight. Corey says he's not hurt, but he clearly is. Sean explains that Jennifer invited him to her country club, and Corey asks, and he couldn't say, he was just having dinner with his best friend. Sean reveals that Jennifer found his box of Cinnabon receipts, alluding to many receipts and many Cinnabons, which is just funny.
So ridiculous and perfect.
I told you to destroy them.
Burn them.
God, yeah. Amazing. I can't do it. Corey scolds him. I told you to burn those. Sean says he couldn't, and how Jennifer won't let him out of her sight. Jennifer then yells over, their court is open. Sean apologizes to Corey, and Corey continues to play it cool. They both start to hang up, only again to pull it back up to the air quickly to see if the other says anything before ultimately hanging up. The audience is, again, just
hook,
sure
does.
I mean, they get such a kick out of this bit. They are more invested in this than anything Corey and Topanga have ever done, by the way.
Yep.
Corey turns back to Topanga. He doesn't even like tennis. Topanga points out that he's a wreck. Corey thinks Sean doesn't need him anymore now that he has Jennifer. Topanga reminds him of when they first started going out. She never kept him from seeing Sean because she knows there's something about a best friend that no one can replace. Corey's shocked. You understood that? Topanga asks why she spent the entire day baking a pie she was never going to eat. Corey mentions that's because she's a sweet girl. Topanga says Sean deserves a sweet girl too. A girl who understands that a best friend is part of who you are. And if she doesn't accept your best friend, then she's really not accepting you. You know, the way you hated my best friend Trini, who disappeared off the show after we got back together. Oh, wait, I added that last part by myself. That was just me. No, that wasn't part of the show.
Well, Topanga's allowed to have her own life and her own friends and to do her own, you know.
Yeah. Really? You think so?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. She has her own social life. She has her own identity. It's very clear that.
I used to have a friend.
That this love, the friendship triangle thing.
It's clear. It's definitely a balanced relationship.
Women also can have, you know.
Well, you're still dressed like you're in the 70s, by the
way. I know.
A much too short skirt.
The belts.
And the 70s outfit. Yes. Notice that as well.
Topanga tells him he needs to clean up the kitchen and go to dinner at Chubby's in about an hour. Corey asks why, but she just emphasizes in about an hour before walking away. And then we're outside the theater. We see a poster for Eric's show that reads, "Look at me, look at me," accompanied with a dramatic black and white headshots of him, an intriguing offer. Opening night special, free shoe rental with every ticket.
And that,
Will,
that
did you get
is,
to keep this poster?
Yes,
it's framed like
house.
20 feet from here. Yep, I have the original poster like 20 feet.
We are going to have to ask you
to take a picture next to that poster
and
send it to us.
Still have it.
Inside the theater, the spotlight turns on, revealing Eric dressed in all black like a mime, his head tucked into his turtleneck, sitting on a stool as he plays the sound of a baby crying. He reenacts his birth by pulling his head out of his turtleneck and exclaiming, June 24th, 1978, I am born. Eric shares a birthday, June 24th, with my son, Adler. Aww. 24 brothers.
That's right.
But Eric, I feel like there's Adler, been baby. some conflict with Eric's birthday. Yeah, yeah, because when he turned 16 to get his license, it was like a snowstorm or something. Like, there's like, it's whenever you want. Yeah, whenever you need it. But
yeah.
Well, I'm in 1978,
I'm trying to think how old you would have been. Well, yeah, I guess that makes sense. You would have been 20 or 19.
Yeah, Eric's supposed to be 2 years younger than me in this, apparently.
So okay. If you were born in 78 and this was in 96, you're supposed to be 18.
Yeah, which makes sense. Yeah, you're just out of high school. You're the year after high school.
Keep going, Will. Keep going. The 15 and then
18. Eight,
right, there you go.
Okay.
He's good at math.
Get a glass of milk. You deserve
Capricorn Sagittarius number.
You deserve a glass of milk.
If you keep adding 1978 onto itself, 6,174.
We see Feeny, Amy, and Alan watching on in disbelief. Eric lists the events that happened on his day of birth, calling John Paul II, John Paul II.
I love that he just like looked in an encyclopedia for what was happening that year. Right? It was like clearly like you would say nowadays, he just Googled what happened in the year and just starts listing things.
Funkin' Wagnalls it back in the day. Yes, exactly.
So funny. A new dance craze sweeps the nation. He plays disco music and a disco ball appears above him. He stands in a dramatic Saturday Night Fever pose. This forces a couple to quickly get up and leave. They have made a decision about his play in the first 15 seconds. Eric continues, 1984, I poo-poo on a bus.
So I think that's the only take that I did that I wasn't laughing.
Oh, really?
I could not get through 1984
and
poo-poo on a bus.
Because you are so committed. So I didn't see you about to break at all.
I remember Michael even saying to me at one time after one run through, he's like, you got to hold it together for that line. I'm like, I'm trying, but
it's
that line.
So funny.
It's brilliant.
Also, the fact that you're six.
Oh, that's true. I didn't even think about that. Wait. 6 years old, he poops on a bus.
Yeah, six. And I'm pooping on a bus.
I didn't even put that together. That's so funny.
I couldn't hold it together for that line. It was so funny.
Oh, man. I'm so glad
And Rusty's laughing the whole time. During run-through, it's just, you know, the audience isn't there. It's just Rusty and Betsy and Bill.
It's such a shame you didn't get to do this in front of the audience.
I know. It was great. Really funny.
So then we're in the back room of Chubby's. Topanga's leaning on the pool table as Sean walks through the brand new hot pink curtains. He's never seen those before. He's still wearing his country club outfit, and now he has a tennis trophy.
I'm so happy that they never mention it. Yep. It is the best that it's just, you've just got a trophy. You obviously won some tennis tournament.
I mean, pretty good that you won, and you don't usually play. So.
Oh, it's so great.
Sean asks why Topanga wanted to see him, and she tells him that someone else wants to see you. Corey nervously appears, staring at Sean as he walks up. Topanga says she knows they haven't seen each other in a while, so she'll just wait outside. Sean compliments Corey on his girlfriend, admiring the thoughtful act. They decide to shoot some stick, and Corey reminisces...
Who says that, by the way?
I know.
I was like, shoot some steak?
Do you? When he drinks his milk.
We had a pool table growing up, and we'd always go shoot some steak. You want to shoot some steak? Yeah, always. That's what we said. Yeah. Maybe it's an East Coast thing.
Corey reminisces about the days they used to be able to do this without the specter of the Wicked Witch of the West hanging over them. Sean looks disappointed, and Corey corrects himself. Not that Jennifer is a wicked witch. Corey tries to connect. If you're going out with this girl, there's got to be something really nice about her, and I just want you to be happy. Sean thanks him, but giggles. It's hard to take you seriously with chalk on your nose. Corey tries to wipe it off, but Sean goes ahead and does it for him. And just then, mid-wipe, Jennifer walks in and gasps. Corey shrieks back in the
so
classic
clever to
Ben
create
way.
A physical thing to bring us together as if we're like caught kissing. Right. I mean, it's really clever like that.
Yes.
That takes a next level because, you know, just having her, you know, she's coming in. Right.
Of course.
Right. But like putting us in a compromising position.
Right, exactly.
It's like, how do you do that with two straight guys without like literally having, you know, go into a territory we can't go without ruining the joke. So it's like, oh, you have to have the straight guys touching each other.
Right.
Like, I'm sure they went through it. They were like, could he be helping him do a pool thing where they're like bending over?
That's too far.
Can't do that.
Because he has crumbs on his shirt.
Yeah. You got to make it intimate.
Hair
and like
out of
funny.
His Johnny. Face. Something would be too sexual.
Oh, but the chalk is perfect. It's great.
It's great.
So Corey shrieks in his classic Ben way. Jennifer yells, "How could you do this to me?" And Sean quickly explains, "This isn't Corey. This is cake."
Legendary line.
And
Legendary
I kept pausing line. It for Ben.
To see Ben's face.
Turning
Ben's
into cake.
That's cake
and
face.
Who knew that, like, if something is deceptively cake would become like a regular part
is
of culture
cake?
Right, is it cake, like there's TV, cake shows, TV shows, multiple TV shows about is it cake, and this is like something my son loves.
I know
we could be cake right now.
I could be cake.
How weird is that, like, of all the jokes to have made, this is this is cake.
I know.
Like actually kind of a thing now. I don't know,
so
weird.
Funny,
but yeah, Ben's cake face.
Can you have milk with cake? Is that okay?
I mean, I never drink milk at all, but you do you, man.
That's why your bones are brittle, bro.
Mm-hmm. How do you know my bones are brittle?
Because I high-fived you and hurt your wrist. That's why.
Sean asks how she knew he was at Chubby's, and she says she received an anonymous tip on her cell phone. And that's the first cell phone reference on Boy Meets World.
Oh.
What is it, 96? We haven't actually seen anybody with a phone, huh?
No.
It's 96?
96, right? Yeah.
Did you have cell phones in 96?
I had a pager, and I think I had my Nokia phone, yeah.
I had a big phone in my car, but I used
a car phone.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we
so
had the
expensive.
Big that cost a dollar
a minute. $32
a minute
or whatever it was.
But we all had pagers.
And I'm pretty sure by 96, because I know I had a phone that I could use by the time I started driving, which would have been 97. So...
Like I remember by the end of Boy, we were doing what's the snake game in the Nokia?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The
you
best on our
Blackberries. Snake, yes.
I love Snake. I would still play Snake,
oh
and I miss
God.
My Blackberry. Blackberries are the greatest phones ever.
It was a Blackberry,
ever.
Huh?
I had a Nokia.
I was on a Nokia. Yeah, that's what I remember.
I had
us
that,
doing there
but
doing
then
Nokia.
I also had the Blackberry with the keyboard and the little roller ball.
I had the little black flip phone, whatever that was, with the little antenna that one everybody had, whatever that was.
Yeah. I remember those, too. The Razors.
Yeah. Razor.
Is that what it was?
Yeah,
Motorola Razor. Yeah.
Motorola, that's what it was.
This episode is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Listen, Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their tushies.
Especially when they start really moving.
With Huggies Little Movers, you get their best fitting diaper with its curved and stretchy fit.
That's right. So no matter what kind of mover you've got, they'll feel protected and comfy while their little tushy wiggles and jiggles all around.
Huggies Little Movers has curves designed to fit all baby curves and helps provide up to 12-hour protection against leaks.
So make the switch to Huggies Little Movers today.
We got you, baby.
We talk a lot about moms on this podcast and how important they are to us.
Absolutely. Without Jen Fischel, what pictures would we post on our social media?
But above and beyond all the incredible mom things they did for us, laundry, dinners, let us travel to Los Angeles alone to chase our dreams of acting. Will, what else was your mom doing?
My mom was also running all three courts in Connecticut while authoring books.
Wow.
Well, whether your mom was a legal trailblazer or just the greatest source of inspiration and care in the world, this Mother's Day, she deserves some flowers.
You're right, and that's why I'm sending mine Farm Fresh Flowers from Books.
That's short for bouquets. And while I'm teaching you things, how about 25% off your entire Books order so you can join us in treating our mothers to a beautiful arrangement?
Love it.
Here's why I like the Books Company. They are different. Their flowers are cut fresh and sourced directly from the best flower farms, so they last way longer. They even have flowers grown on the side of a volcano.
That's really cool. Books has modern designs and unique flowers you can't find anywhere else. Your mom is unique, so she deserves flowers just as special.
And Books is simple. I went online, picked the delivery date, and I'm done.
Mother's Day is May 12th. Don't miss the chance to thank your mom. Order your Books now.
And with 25% off, you can send some to mom, wife, aunt, and even grandma.
Go to Books.com and use promo code WORLD for 25% off.
That's Books.com, promo code WORLD.
Books, promo code WORLD.
When it comes to Pod Meets World, we're synonymous with two things. Watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago and loving Hyundai.
If we could, we would take Hyundai to prom.
Technically, Hyundai is more visible on this show than Topanga.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to a 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
Say teched-out again.
Nope, that was a one-time show. Snooze, you lose.
Well, either way, the Hyundai Ioniq 5 is a tech-forward electric SUV.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
So that means your car won't die out like the Matthews family vehicle on New Year's Eve, forcing me to miss out on kissing supermodel Rebecca Alexa in front of all of Philadelphia.
And with available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car, backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only. Corey doesn't understand. The only person that knew where they were was Topanga.
And is that the first
Topanga?
And that's Topanga?
The first one.
That's okay. So there's a lot of firsts in this. Or a
lot of firsts. This is kind of an iconic episode.
Yes.
Yeah. I think this locked in a lot of things.
Yeah.
I think so too. You know, I think that this whole love triangle joke of like Corey and Sean, like, yeah. I mean, it's all basically because of this episode, because of the success of this episode and the success of us as like finding the comedy together. It just,
Yep, I agree.
On cue, Topanga walks in talking like a Scooby-Doo villain. It was I who made the call. It's time she knew. She reveals to Jennifer that the boys have kept their relationship alive despite her evil attempt to keep them apart. Topanga snips, true friendship is stronger than the allure of a cheap kiss. Jennifer doesn't react, so Topanga looks up at her and shouts, "Hey, I'm talking to you up there." What do you guys remember about this line reading and this scene and all of
this? Oh, you can hear my line reading too.
Yeah.
That stupid cunt. Like, what am I doing?
I know.
It's not
what
me.
What was that? What was that cunt?
I don't.
That was a line reading that Michael gave me. Like, clearly, I was just being told. Because I think it's maybe like an impression of somebody from an old-timey movie. I don't know.
Right.
But you can tell that I am not comfortable with it. It's not funny. And I'm just doing an imitation. That
I actually wondered, because you know Dee Dee DeStefano, who was a wonderful guest on Pod Meets World. She says bathroom and cunt.
And cunt.
Yeah.
And so I was wondering if it was like a thing. Yeah, it was a mic.
No, the second I saw it, I was like, this makes me angry and uncomfortable. And I feel like this is not what I want to be doing.
Brings up the feelings you
have. Immediately
brought
up the feeling of like, oh, I have to do it this way and I don't want to. And this is not funny to me, but I got to do it and get the obligatory laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hated this scene, this part of the scene.
I don't remember the scene at all, but I thought your line reading was funny, Danielle. The hey, because it was the way it was kind of stilted, mixed to me with the kind of 30s talking. It was I who did.
Right,
I'm talking to you
just,
up there.
This is I wouldn't want to change a word of this scene. I would just want to go back and have another take, another rehearsal, and do it all. Or, like I said, actually go back a day so it was less rehearsed. Because as it is, it feels like we are line delivery systems delivering jokes, and they are funny jokes.
Yeah.
But I wanted this to have the organic human quality
freshness
that the library scene had. If you know, like this just felt like child actors doing their bits.
Right. I can see that. So she gives him an ultimatum, telling it's Corey or it's. Then she grabs his hair and pulls him in for one of her mind altering kisses, and then says, "Me." Post kiss, Sean then turns to Corey. "Okay, what do you got?" Corey shrugs. Can't top that. Sean snaps himself back to reality. He tells Jennifer, "Corey's my friend, and so is Topanga. If you can't be friends with my friends, then I'm not so sure I want to be friends with you. But we can still kiss." She rolls her eyes. "Consider yourself dumped, Sean." He doesn't react, so she asks, "Didn't you hear me? I said you're dumped." He wags his finger at her. It doesn't bother him this time as he stands next to Corey and Topanga because he's getting more than he's losing. Jennifer sarcastically responds, "I hope you're all very happy together. See, she saw.
Trouble.
She saw what we had."
That's what Sue said, too. Sue said, she's watching. She said, "I think this might be one of the original thruples ever on television."
Certainly the first teen thruple.
Yes. You and I would have to actually talk to each other.
She leaves, attempting to give Corey a hiss when she passes, but he gives her one right back. Corey embraces Sean and Topanga. Things are finally back to normal. No more lies. No more sneaking around. They'll be able to do whatever they want, whenever they want. Corey awkwardly asks, "So, what do you want to do?" Sean responds, "I don't know. What do you want to do?"
Corey pauses. See you at school? Sean agrees. Yeah, see you at school. And they both walk away, leaving Topanga completely confused. Why did they make such a big deal about being together if they weren't going to be together?
That's the joy of being
I
dudes.
I know. I dude love it. Joy. It is the the joy of true friendships.
Yep.
Great. I know you really well.
Right. See you tomorrow.
So then we're in the tag. We're back in the theater. Eric's one-man show continues. He's finally gotten to being 18 years old. He mentions the crossroads he faces, and then he says, transition. We see Amy dead asleep in the audience. Alan is hitting himself in the head. Eric rewinds back to his days as a five-year-old in kindergarten when he didn't know which cubby was his. He connects.
He's going backwards. Like, you think you're getting far enough, and then he goes back to being five, and it's like, ugh. Just Alan's like, oh, God, he's five again.
We've got 400 pages.
Here's what is so awesome about the writing here is like it would have been so easy to make Eric just a bad playwright, but instead they make Eric a sophisticated bad playwright.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Like he's jumping through time and trying to be artistic. Like it's not like, you know, it's like that's what I love about it's like because you could see somebody hitting play on a jukebox and like having background noise of babies crying. Like there's a version of like taking himself so seriously. And I just love it. I love that he's not like because even in the joke with the script with Feeny, it was just bad writing. But here it's like good bad or it's like layered bad writing, and that is just the genius of like our writing staff, like to be able to take it to that level of like don't just have it be the joke that he's it's a horrible it's like have it be it's so good.
He's actually really self-reflective. He's able to go at this point when I did not know which cubby was mine. I also find myself like he's truly looked
he's
back on the course of his
time
and
he's finding connection.
It's so great. He connects the two crossroads and ends with nap time. Feeny appears on stage and asks Eric how he's doing. Eric
love
admits.
It. How you doing?
Oh, so funny.
Just sitting there the whole time.
Spotlight.
How you doing?
Eric admits he doesn't know why he did this in the first place. His life is meaningless. No one wants to hear him talk about it. Even his own parents are asleep. Feeny gives some wisdom. In the play of your life, all your great scenes lie ahead of you. Eric asks, so in 30 to 40 years, I could write a play you'd want to come and see? Feeny says no, tonight pretty much killed any interest he had in the theater.
He's so good.
Great line.
I miss these scenes so much. These are my favorite scenes of the whole series. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Eric asks Feeny where his life will go from here, and Feeny explains, now you have passion, you have drive, certainly you have guts. I frankly can't wait to see what happens to you. Eric asks with a glimmer in his eye, you're not going to tell me to give up my life as an actor and go get a college education? Feeny says he's told him to get a college education 10,000 times. He doesn't need to tell him again. Eric asks about his acting, and Feeny doesn't hesitate. Get a college education.
Get a college
God,
education.
So good. And I mean, this is like, you know, this is amazing Boy Meets World. Mm-hmm. Like, because you have the joke of a one-man show, over-the-top ridiculous comedy stuff.
Yeah.
And you still pull the heartstrings, pull the life lessons, make it believable, and create an amazing relationship between two characters. And like, it's just solid family writing. It's so
also
good.
In the writing, they easily, in any other show, I think, could have done a scene just like this, but it would have been backstage or off. To have Feeny on stage in the middle of the show, in the spotlight, to where then you cut back to Amy and Alan watching the two of them together on the stage.
And that becomes a show.
That becomes
so it's
the
actually
show
a successful one-man show in a way. I know.
So
and them talking
good.
About you as the two of you great together.
Yeah.
It's like basically our writers and our show saying,
we look love at them it
great
too. Together.
We know that these two are great together as actors, as characters. Like we all love this. And it's like it encodes for the audience a comfort level with the whole thing. You're
it's
just like
so
yeah.
good. It's a whole nother
it's
layer.
So beautiful.
That is just
it's
the writing
so beautiful.
Is incredible.
Yep. I know. It's beautiful. Alan, kind of awake, tells Amy, this part's pretty good. She smiles. Yeah, those two are pretty great together. Mm. And then we see Feeny and Eric, who has again tucked his head inside his turtleneck. His partner in crime, Mr. Feeny, sits next to him in embarrassment. And that's our show. Yep.
And that I was want all Michael, another 15 minutes. I want another 15 minutes. I just wish we had another tag, like room for another tag. If we had cut that first scene, we would have had room for another tag, and it could have just been split second one-liners of you, like throughout the night of the show. Right? Do you know what I mean? Like, if we had just let the camera roll and they threw out jokes and let you do whatever you could, they could have had a whole like mashup of Eric one woman show beats that would have been so funny.
That was Michael, though. Michael was like, all right, put the thing back up.
Yeah.
And then he's like, now look at him. And so I was like, that's when I turned and looked at him in the thing. And it was very funny.
Now, see, imagine if we had done just another half hour of that. It would have been so
exactly.
good. Exactly. Oh, I want to go back.
Well, thank you all for joining us for this episode of Pod Meets World. As always, you can follow us on Instagram, Pod Meets World Show. You can send us your emails, podmeetsworldshow@gmail.com. And we have merch.
Danielle and I'll never be movie stars merch.
Podmeetsworldshow.com. Please join us for our next episode, which is season 4, episode 12, Easy Street. Now, this is episode 411 on Disney Plus. They aired them out of order. We're going in DVD order. So you will watch 411 if you're watching on Disney Plus. It originally aired December 13th, 1996. Writer, send us out.
We love you all, even just you TV actors. Pod dismissed. Pod Meets World is an iHeart podcast produced and hosted by Danielle Fishel, Will Friedle, and Ryder Strong. Executive producers Jensen Karp and Amy Sugarman. Executive in charge of production Danielle Romo. Producer and editor Tara Sudbach. Producer Maddie Moore. Engineer and Boy Meets World superfan Easton Allen. Our theme song is by Kyle Morton of Typhoon. Follow us on Instagram at Pod Meets World Show or email us at podmeetsworldshow@gmail.com.
When I'm on my way to drop off the kids at school and I'm on about 5 hours of sleep and I haven't had my coffee yet, I'm truly one of a kind.
Yeah, this sounds like the beginning of a horror movie.
It is. But there is one thing I can do immediately to bring some comfort and calm to the situation and keep me moving forward. Eat Keebler Sandies.
I like to think that if the good-looking guy was still around, sitting on the couch, comforting himself about not getting into college, he'd ditch the Cocoa Puffs and down some Keebler Sandies instead.
Mixed with chocolate syrup?
Ooh, why not?
When you need a comforting moment for yourself, Keebler Sandies is the perfect treat to keep you going.
Each Keebler Sandies shortbread cookie is baked to perfection by the Keebler elves for a light sweetness and a texture that melts in your mouth.
The next time you feel like you're juggling it all, reach for Keebler Sandies shortbread cookies to enjoy a simple moment of comfort.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference.
That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through.
BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy.
Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you.
Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. When it comes to Pod Meets World, we're synonymous with two things. Watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago and loving Hyundai.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
And as you know, we are tech heads.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
And with the available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car, backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only.